Welcome to Lesbians Who Write with Claire Lydon and T.B. Markinson. Conversations about writing and lesbian fiction. Join us as we draw back the curtain on the writer's life. Hello and welcome to episode 198 of Lesbians Who Write. This week's topic is how to write the perfect book. Joining me, Claire Lydon, is my co-host. She is perfection personified, T.B. Markinson. Hello, T.B. How are you today?
I am extremely exhausted, and I will explain in a bit why I am so tired. But first, let me get into my author news, and then I will tell you why I feel like a zombie today. But first up, Heart of Ice is finally $6.99.
That deserves a whole trumpet blast, not just a toot toot.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, that took like a month to change the price. Just when I was about to give up hope, I got the email saying, congrats, your book is available in the Kindle store. I always find it weird. Like, I get it the first time you publish a book because it is like, congrats, your book's available. But every time you make a change, like, if you change the blurb, change the cover, change the price, you get the same email. And the first few times I had it when I was a newbie author, I was like, wait, I didn't publish the book. What are they talking about? Like, so the book finally is back at normal price. No explanation as to what was going on, because I was asking around and not many people were having the same issue. So usually when something like that is happening, like it's all over like 20 books and stuff like that. But no, just seems to be me. They just don't like Heart of Ice, but it's finally back, and I don't think that book is ever going on sale.
No, I think Heart of Ice is, you missed your window if you wanted to buy it cheaply. Let's be honest, the window was pretty long.
You had a lot of time. A lot of time. In other news, in other fantastic news, my latest co-write with Miranda is with the editor. It's always such a nice feeling when you send the book to the editor, especially one that you missed a couple deadlines for. This one was a bit of a challenge because Miranda's surgery got moved. It was supposed to be at the end of December, and it got moved to February, right smack dab in the middle of this project. So it was one of those things where we had to juggle a lot. So it was a huge relief to get it off to the editor. Now we're talking about our plot for the next one. I love this stage. I love plotting in the very beginning before you start writing, because it's just so shiny and it's new and it's exciting. And then you start writing and you're like, oh yeah, this is still a job, this is work. But right now I'm like, oh, this is fun, and then what happens, and then what happens? So I'm in the euphoria stage of a project.
You are like that woman what won the Eurovision for Sweden. What's her name?
I don't know. I don't watch Eurovision.
She won it with Euphoria, and then she won it again last year for Sweden again. I'm just looking up her name. Anyway, carry on and I'll get back to you.
All right. So do you remember the last time we spoke when I said I was really tired of winter and just wanted to be warm?
I do.
Okay. So apparently Mother Nature listens to our podcast and decided to punish me for that statement, for that criticism of the how she is handling the weather. And so we ended up getting a bunch of snow last week. Sadly, it was on April 1st. It was on April 3rd. I thought, you know, she missed the window. That would have been a chef's kiss kind of situation if we got like 6 inches of snow on April 1st. Mm-hmm. But, and then the next day, we had an earthquake.
Oh my goodness. You know what? I did hear about that because it hit New York, right? And I did see the snow because I have friends who live in New York. So yeah, they were sharing pictures of the snow. And, you know, in American terms, you're not so far away, are you?
No. So it was funny because we were on a video call discussing our new book. So I could see Miranda's face. She felt it first. And all of a sudden, like, I just see her, like, throw her arms out and, like, a shocked expression on her face. And I'm just like, everything okay? And then all of a sudden, I felt it. And both of us are Californians. So, like, because sometimes you don't know what's happening, but it was definitely a rolling type earthquake. And I was like, are we having an earthquake? And so it's not the first earthquake I felt in the Massachusetts area. Back in 2011, there was an earthquake as well. So it does happen, but it's extremely rare. And then it's always fun to see the memes and everything, because like there was the earthquake, there was the eclipse, there was the snow, so like everyone's talking about the end of the world, so it's always kind of fun. Speaking of the eclipse, so yesterday Brandon and I drove to Vermont, really far up into Vermont, because we were in Massachusetts, we were at the 95% level for the eclipse, and we wanted to see the full eclipse, so we got in the car very early yesterday. We pulled out of Miranda's driveway probably at 5:05 in the morning, because we had a whole day plan. We love Vermont. We drove and we did some sightseeing. We, you know, did all the fun stuff, and then we were lucky enough to find a spot that had like a little pond or a lake. I think it was a lake, and we were there for the eclipse. Holy moly, that was really truly amazing. Like, have you ever watched an eclipse?
No.
It takes a while, obviously, for the moon to go directly in front of it completely. So you can just kind of watch it. I mean, you have to use the glasses and everything. And I had a special thing for my phone camera, which didn't take great photos. It was pretty exciting to see, and we were there. It wasn't a very crowded spot. It was a very small town in Vermont. I think the population normally is like 900, but obviously a lot of people were traveling to Vermont and Maine and New Hampshire for this. When the moon went completely and covered it, like the crowd just started applauding, and there were these little kids in front of us, and one of them screamed, "This is the best day of my life." It was just so fun, and it was so weird to see, because like for that, with the full eclipse, you can take your glasses off for like I think it was 2 minutes, and it was amazing to see. It was amazing to feel how cold it got suddenly, and then how quickly it comes back, because even when it's just a tiny sliver, it's like almost full daylight again. So it was an amazing experience. But since, I don't know, 160,000 people decided to leave Massachusetts to drive to Vermont, the traffic on the way back was hellish. Oh my gosh. Because we all got on our cars, like, it was like it happened at 3 something. So we all get in the cars like at 4. It took us 4 hours to go 50 miles.
Oh my goodness.
So we were in the car for a very long time. We left at 4. I didn't drop Miranda off at her place until like 11:15, 11:30, and then I got home after midnight. So yeah, it was a long day. That's why I'm extremely tired, because then I had to get up early today for a lot of IHS stuff. So, but it was worth it. Totally worth it. Was one of those things that was just absolutely amazing to see.
Well, so, it's literally a once in a lifetime event. So,
well, there is another one coming, but we had two younger members of our party, and one of them was like, "Well, this might be the last time you guys see it, because the next one's 21 years." So I'm like, I'm hoping when I'm 71, I'm still kicking. Like, but yeah, you never know. It might not work out. Another thing we had to take into account, because we had a different destination in mind yesterday. But then when we woke up, we checked the cloud cover. So we had to, like, change tact. So that was another thing that went against us on the way back, because we had to go another hour out of our way so we didn't have clouds, because we didn't. The place we had chose was, like, 40 to 60% cloud coverage prediction. And I'm like, well, that sucks. And so we went to a place that had 0 to 20%, and we didn't have clouds. So it was amazing. And then, of course, there was music playing, and whoever chose the playlist, I don't know if it was like a Spotify list or something, but it had every mention of eclipse, every like solar thing, everything to do with space, and then of course Total Eclipse of the Heart, which was pretty much perfect. Fantastic experience. Something we got to enjoy together. Good day.
Good. No, it looked you know, I was looking at from the telly, and you can't really gauge anything from the telly. I'm sure I have friends and family who saw it, and they all said it was magical.
It truly was. It truly was. So what's going on your side? Anything magical across the pond?
Well, I'll just say the singer who sang Euphoria was Loreen. Loreen? Yes, Loreen. Anyway, over here on this side of the pond, we didn't get an eclipse, so sadness. It was just 8 o'clock at night for us. That was it. So since we spoke last, not that much has been going on really. My upcoming book. Oh, I've revealed the title, so I don't know if you know that. It's called Just Kiss Her.
Okay.
Succinct, to the point, and weirdly, not that many books called Just Kiss Her, which I was quite surprised about when I checked. So
Was the long title you were contemplating?
I'm not gonna say because I might use it in a different book, but let's just say this title won mainly because it looked better on the cover. The other one had a really long word that just didn't fit. So this was there was two titles, and I went for this one in the end because I like the cover. So I'll send you the cover to put on the podcast anyway. But that's it's back from the editor this week actually. So as this goes out, I'll already have it back. But apart from that, the other big thing I've been doing since we spoke last is sign up for Shopify and start on my new Shopify store. Now, I bought a course how to do this, and it's not very good.
Was this the expensive course?
Yeah, the really expensive one. Yeah.
It's not good.
Well, I think the thing is, it's too involved. There's too many other things in it, and I've got to do lots of steps before I get to the spot shop. I keep calling it Spotify. If I do, just take it. I mean Shopify. And if you don't know, Shopify is a back-end white box online shop solution that is good for authors at the moment. Other online stores are available. Yeah, so I'm trying to sort of piece it together, but it's slow going. That's all I'll say. I swore a lot. I've done it 3 days in a row. I've been swearing an awful lot. I've backed away. I've sworn a lot. Shopify have sent me an email today saying, "Hey, why don't you come back and finish your online store?" I'm like, "Oh, fuck off, Shopify." So that's where we are at the moment. Got a book coming back and a store in sort of pieces, but I know I will get it done. It just as a friend of mine reminded me yesterday when I was speaking to her about it. She's like, "Yes, but I remember you having all these emotions and all this, let's call it what it is, really, right? Fear of the unknown, isn't it?" So, oh God, I really must turn off that. Hey, how about a cup of tea? No, no cup of tea. You know, it's just fear of the unknown, isn't it? And facing something new and a challenge, and especially a technical challenge. And it's not like I don't understand the back end of systems. I do, but this one I haven't done before, and it just feels big. And so, but I know I've done it before with different things. Like my friend was saying to me, "I remember when you started publishing audiobooks and you were really scared about how to do it and you didn't know how to do it, but you figured it out. And now you just put audiobooks up as a matter of course." So I know Shopify will get easier and I know in the end I'll have a better shop for it for readers to come to. But yeah, it's on the way, and that's good, isn't it? Apparently there's 16 steps to do to get your Shopify store up and running. I've done three. Go
Okay,
me.
well, there you go. There you
Yeah.
go. But I don't know if I should say this or not, but I'm just going to say it. But it does make me feel better sometimes because usually I'm the one who's like melting down and be like, this, I hate this, blah, 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 blah. It always warms my heart when you're like the negative one. It's like, makes me feel less alone because there are times where like, sometimes where you're just like, wow, this other person never struggles with things and I'm here like trying to like, swim upstream all by myself. So, thank you for struggling.
That's no problem. I'm here for you. Yeah, and your update was pretty happy and joyous to this time around, right? You
Well,
got
I'm
to
not dealing with Shopify.
no, you got to see a solar eclipse. That's pretty cool. Whereas I'm trying to put a fucking Shopify store up, and I'm losing the will to live. Anyway, what else has been going on? Actually, I've got some. I am the negative Nelly this time around, but with good reason. So, more of my books have been plagiarized. This is not a new thing. This is ongoing, but it's just a new way of doing it. But I have to say, I did report it all to Amazon. They got back to me within 2 or 3 days, and they've taken them all down. So, maybe the process is speeding up. I don't know. It'll be ongoing. I'm sure there will be other books of mine plagiarized. This is just the way of the world, especially with people who are just running it through AI programs and then just slapping it up with frankly crap covers. I mean, my God, those covers they're using and all the translations, nightmare.
Oh, sorry. They got another one of mine, which they already plagiarized before, like a year ago. So they're
Right.
going back through.
That's good to know. The other thing that happened, that has been happening and is also ongoing, and it's just exhausting is I've been getting a lot of online hate. I'm used to getting online hate on my face. It's on Facebook mainly, and I'm used to getting it on my Facebook ad. So I do ads for books in the UK, US, and in Italy. And in Italy, I get so much online hate because Italy is a very conservative Catholic country, and they're not very au fait with the gay. So I get a lot of online hate on my ads. But because that's advertising a book, I don't know. I kind of put up with it, you know. You shouldn't have to. It shouldn't be what happens in the world. And I have to say that there are a lot of Italians who jump in and defend my books as well, and a lot of Italians are enjoying my books. So you know, it kind of, I kind of think it balances out. But lately, I've been getting right wing groups have somehow found me, and they're just like posting my posts, like my general Facebook posts, into these online groups, and then inviting a pile on. So that's been a new method of hatred, and also sort of making random and bad comments to people who have commented on my posts in a homophobic manner. So I'm trying to police that. So it's just another thing to do, isn't it? It's exhausting. And it's just a sign of the way the world's going. So yeah, our tables have turned this week. You're the happy, happy, joy, joy. I am, yeah. There's a lot of shit going on in the world.
Well, now I want to take back happy or miserable, because the last update is uncalled for, it's demoralizing, it is hurtful. Hurtful not just to you, but hurtful to the commenters, and hurtful to just anyone who just wants to live their life to their fullest. So I am so tired of online hate in social media, which is why I'm hardly ever on social media, to be honest, because I was experiencing that, and I decided for my own mental health to not put myself through it. It's becoming harder and harder to avoid the wrath of people who just, they thrive on hate. It's the thing that gets them out of bed in the morning. Yeah. So it's depressing.
It is depressing. I'm trying to rise above it, but it does affect you, you know, because it's like, you know, I can say, oh, I'm fine about it, but it makes you hesitate about putting things up, and that's what they want, I suppose. Like you say, because you've got to protect yourself and your own mental health. And I thought it was just a one-off thing, but no, it just keeps happening. So I'm keeping an eye on it, but I'm having to police. I'm blocking a lot of people. I'm having to police who can comment on my posts. And I've never had to do that in, what, a decade of posting on Facebook, however long Facebook's been around. So it makes me sad. Anyway, on the upside, Spurs have an FA Cup semi-final, Spurs women, this weekend, and they're playing at the main Spurs stadium. By the time this goes out, it will have been yesterday, so this goes out on Monday. Spurs women are playing on yesterday, so the result will be known. So fingers crossed, fingers and toes and eyes and everything else that you can cross, elbows, I don't know, that they make it to Wembley, because that would be an amazing thing, because I've got tickets. We bought the tickets to the FA Cup final already, so whether Spurs are there or not, we're going. If Spurs aren't there, we're just gonna, yeah, I don't know, be a bit sad and less interested.
I need to see a match at Wembley. I saw the I saw one of the Olympic matches at Wembley. It's an exciting time.
It is. So hopefully we can go, because I can't go this weekend. Because I am off on a caravan writing retreat. You may remember I do these quite often, and I'm off to a caravan with three other MM authors, so gay romance authors, two guys and one woman, and the four of us are going off to a caravan for 4 days, where we just sit and write, and we all cook meals before we go, so we don't have to worry about food. And yeah, it's just a nice little break away, and I'm going to use it to brainstorm my festive romance, which is next on my docket to write. So when Just Kiss Her comes back from the editor, then I will ready it to be released, because I've got the cover sorted and everything. But my next book to write is Christmas romance, and I've got no idea what it's going to be. I haven't even thought about it really, but I'm hoping this weekend. My wife bought me some lovely stationery for my 10-year anniversary as an author. She bought me a really posh notebook and a really lovely pen. So I'm going to take both of those with me to the caravan, and I'm sure I'll come up with something, because it's, you know, it's 2 full days and 2 half days where it's just, we do nothing 7 hours a day We're just gonna sit and brainstorm and write, and yeah, and then in the evenings we have dinner together and chat about our writing. So it's nice.
That sounds nice. So so you know, you had some depressing stuff, but you came around to a good, happy feeling.
Yeah.
To go spend time with fellow authors and try to work out a Christmas book. So, I mean, doesn't get happier than that, does it?
No, I know. You see, there's an antidote to all the online hate. Let's write about Christmas. Ha! Ladies are falling in love at Christmas. I'll tell them about that. That'll fucking rattle their cages, won't it?
Well, they don't like happiness, no. Especially when it comes to women.
No to happiness. Right, got any comments, TB?
We do. We do have comments. Up first is Kim. Kim commented on what rules do you like to break. So my favorite rule to break in writing is no one ever just says what they mean. It's unrealistic, so don't let your characters do that bullshit. A, lots of people, especially neurodivergent peeps, do in fact just bluntly say exactly what they mean, exactly what they are thinking, and I'm one of them. And then I find a lot of the writing rules are actually just whatever the current fashion is, and while it's usually a good idea to keep aware-ish of current trends, they are not in fact sacred law. It's also worth considering the role privilege and societal power dynamics play in who makes these rules and who they make them for, and what specific demographic is being catered to. So all good points. All things we should always keep in mind.
Yes, very good points. And I'm all for rule breaking.
Yes, yes. So thank you, Kim, for the comments. Judith also commented saying, love listening to you both. It's nice to hear the voices that go with the faces in books. Thank you for this fun and insightful time. So thank you, Judith, for the comment. And I also got an email from Sally Brooks, our a fellow sapphic author, that we saw at Elcon. Was that Bristol?
It was, yeah.
Bristol back in 2018?
17, I think.
17, 2017, mm-hmm. around there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, pre-COVID times where we would get together more frequently. Mm-hmm. So Sally Brooks said, love listening to you and Claire on the podcast. So thank you, Sally, for listening. Before I get to the coffee updates, do you have any comments on your side?
I do. I've got one. And I will also say that Sally, I know Sally quite well because she has come away with me to a caravan writing retreat. She knows the power of the caravan writing retreat. And she's got a new book upcoming, I think. Anyway, yes, I've got one email sent in from Lotta. And she says, I found out about your podcast a little over 2 weeks ago because TB mentioned it in her newsletter. I never listened to a podcast before, but I decided to give it a try. Now I'm 2 weeks in and I've listened to 26 episodes. I wanted to thank you both for the informative and entertaining podcast, and seeing the amount of episodes I still have, I've got about a year and a half to go till I'm caught up, so I know what to do. She also says, PS, I have to say I can't pick a side in the ice cream debate, as both mint choc chip ice cream and coconut ice cream aren't something I would ever pick. And that is a blast from the past. Remember when you used to have the ice cream debate? It went on for ages, didn't it?
Did, and then I got COVID, and then I didn't like mint for a while.
That's right.
Because it changed my taste, but now I'm back on the mint chocolate chip, so that is back in the top. So, yeah. Luckily, COVID only took it away for a brief time.
I'm pleased that you got your love for mint chocolate chip back. Coconut is still up there for me, although I do like a honeycomb ice cream with hot chocolate sauce tipped over the top of it. What's not to love about that?
Might have to try that sometime, yeah. Might have to give that one a go.
There's a restaurant in London called Scott's. It's quite a fancy seafood restaurant, but they do have this very dessert on their list, and they do it spectacularly. So I'm sure you could just go in there and say, can I have the honeycomb ice cream with hot chocolate sauce? It's worth it.
All right, there you go. That is justification, I think, for getting on a plane.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. We have a coffee update. DDMC21 said, love your podcast and chemistry. Thank you. So thank you very much. And I'm not sure if I said the handle right. I did my best.
Thank you. And just talking about chemistry, one thing I didn't mention was I did go to a really cool author event, probably one of the best I've ever been to this week. And it was Bonnie Garmus, the author of Lessons in Chemistry. If you haven't read that book, I really recommend it. It's not queer in any way, but it's fabulous. It's just one of the best books I've read in my life. And she was absolutely fantastic. I went to see her in conversation with a really good interviewer, a great location. And yeah, it was just a really heartwarming. She was so genuine, warm and funny. And she answered questions on all manner of things. And also she just said that she had 98 rejections for her first book, which still no one wants because it's not Lessons in Chemistry, it was the one before. And she thought that when Lessons in Chemistry came out and sold millions, and she is a global phenomenon, that people would want this first book, but no, they don't.
Wow, has she considered going indie on it?
Who knows? She is writing another one now. But I mean, you know, talk about a first book that really took off. Like, she's had made into an Apple TV series. And have you read it?
I haven't, but you can't go anywhere on Amazon or Audible or Spotify or anything without seeing the cover.
Yeah, but it is with justification for this one. I listened to it in Audible. It was fantastic. Anyway, so that was great. So before we get on to our topic, we've got a couple of things to do first. First of all, I think it was Zoe last week, who last time around, who asked us how we'd rank our two big series. So for me, the London Romance series, for TB, the Lizzie series. So we've said that we would pick our top five books and rank them. So TB, do you want to rank? Give us your top five Lizzie books.
Okay, so I'm going to start with number five. Mm-hmm. I should preface this. These aren't like the best sellers of the Lizzie books. These are the ones I truly enjoyed writing the most. So that's how I went at this one. So number five is A Woman Loved. This was a holiday setting with Lizzie and her insane family. And it was just a lot of fun to put Lizzie through the ringer on this one with all of the holiday madness. When you have a zany family, a holiday is just gold. Because, I mean, I know we all have these, like, we watch, like, Hallmark movies and we want the perfect holiday. And then when the holiday actually happens, it's just, like, chaos. So I put Lizzie through a lot of chaos in A Woman Loved. So that was number five. Number two was A Family Woman. That is with the birth of
hang on number two. So this is your fourth.
I listed them with one through five, but I need to go back. So number four is A Family Woman. That is when Sarah and Lizzie welcome the twins, and again it just put Lizzie through a lot because in the beginning Lizzie was someone who was afraid of commitment and was afraid of family and everything, and so I gave her twins naturally. One does.
Yeah,
so that was a lot of fun. So number three, I think three is still the same, right?
Three is still the same whichever way you go. Yeah.
Number three is A Woman Trapped. That was the book that I brought back because I had ended the Lizzie series, but then COVID hit and I had a lot of time on the couch and I was thinking, which one of my characters would struggle the most with COVID times? And it didn't take me long to land on Lizzie. So that was the surprise book I wrote about Lizzie. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun because I had received, I don't know how many emails saying, I wish you would bring Lizzie back. And I didn't mention this to anyone that I was working on this. And I really tapped into her zaniness and her quirks and everything. So that was a lot of fun. And then the reception of it was a lot of fun because people were like so excited.
So you had actually finished the Lizzie series. I didn't know this.
Yeah, I think it's book seven. It's literally called A Woman Complete.
Oh.
Because I wanted to get the message across. And then COVID happened and it changed everything.
Okay.
Number two is the Lizzie series I'm working, or the Lizzie stories I'm working right now for Patreon. Those are just fun. I spend a month in Lizzie's life and just share all the craziness that is happening in Lizzie's life and just putting her through a lot of torture because
it seems to be a recurring theme.
Well, it's the theme for most stories. I mean, yeah. Like you stick your character up a tree and you just continue to pelt rocks at them. So, and Lizzie's a fun one to pelt rocks at. So, yeah, so the A Woman of the Year is what the Patreon stories will be called. So that is the number two. And number one, I absolutely have to go with the book one, A Woman Lost, just because it was the first book I ever published. It was the first book that went through the editing process. It was just a magical book, and it did put me on this path. So I will always have a fond place in my heart for A Woman Lost. So those are my top five Lizzie books. How about you? What's your top five London?
So I think my top five London. So number five, London Ever After, which I just released. This one it was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, as listeners to the podcast will know. But I'm really pleased with how it turned out, and I think I did a really good job of bringing the whole series full circle. Like, you know, it started off with relatively young people in East London, and it's finished with young people in East London, obviously in London Ever After. All the whole cast of all the other 8 books come back into their lives. But I'm really pleased with how book 9 turned out, so that's number 5. Number 4 is Hot London Nights, and that is book 7 in the series. Now, this one was a surprise, actually, when I wrote it, because it was meant to be, book 7 was meant to be about Lib. He was Eden's flatmate in book 6. But there was I wrote a character in book 6 called India Contelli, who was like a Mary Portis figure. A Mary Portis figure who looked like Bette Porter, kind of, you know, Italian, but like a Bette Porter figure. She was larger than life. She was famous. She had a lot going for her, but also a lot of insecurities. And I loved her so much when I wrote her. She just jumped off the page that I then made book 7 about India Contelli. And Lib didn't get a look in. Poor old Lib. She was reassigned to not even a secondary character, just a bit part. She didn't get the book she was promised, but India Contelli got it, and she rocked it. And that book 7 really, sales-wise, did very well. So I think readers fell in love with India Contelli in book 6 as well, and they wanted more, so they got it. Number three is book 4 in the series. That's confusing, this, isn't it? That is called The London of Us. It's my only first person narrative of the series. All the others are third person, two POV. This one is one POV and it's first person. It's the story of Alice. It's the story of coming out in your 30s. She starts off with a boyfriend in the book. She finishes with a girlfriend. Yeah, it was just a little different, this one. I really loved it, and I think it spoke to a lot of people, because, you know, there's a lot of people that do come out a bit later in life. Obviously, some people would say your 30s aren't that late in life, but, you know, the story is universal, whatever age you come out. Number 2 in the top 5 is London Calling. Bit similar to you, my first book I ever wrote. It's the book 1 of the London Romance series. It's the book that got me started. It will always have a very, very special place in my heart, even though the lead, Jess, is a bit of a stupid ass. But, you know, that's what these books thrive on, isn't it? And she has a happy ending in the end, even though she does everything she can to trip herself up. That book will always be the one that got me going. Got me started, not got me going. That's a bit weird, isn't it? Number 1 is book 8 in the London series, and that is Big London Dreams. And a bit like you, these are not I'm not ranking these on the bestsellers. They're just how I feel about the books, how I feel about writing them. Big London Dreams was a real challenge to write because it's my first and only historical romance. I learnt so much about London. I also got to spend a lot of time with my mum and dad, asking them about their experience of London in the 50s, which was very special. And I mined my mum's job, so the lead character has the very same job my mum had in the 50s. She's a machinist on a factory just off Tottenham Court Road, which is what happened to my mum. That's where the comparisons end. Obviously, I don't think my mum had a lesbian relationship, but who knows? Maybe she never told me. But Big London Dreams, my first ever historical romance, and I think I fell in love with the city that I live in. I love living in London, but I fell in love with it all over again in a historical way, which I know that you loved at the time. But it was really great to just learn more about what happened then, and how things were actually for queers then as well. And they wouldn't have been called queers then, would they? That would have been a slur. And going and visiting all the places that the books took place in. Like, I'd just been to see the Gateways Club, which was the world-renowned sort of underground lesbian bar and club in London, and I was lucky enough to go inside it. Big London Dreams, my favourite London book.
So we both ended with Sentimental.
We did.
Yeah, which I guess is, you know, probably important that these books mean something to us.
Yeah.
So,
definitely.
Yeah. And then you have the memories with your mom and dad as well. And
yes.
Everything. So that's good. It's you gave good. me warm, fuzzy feelings.
Oh, thank you. Right, let's take you very abruptly from warm, fuzzy feelings to big announcement.
I wish I could do the trumpet sound. I'm not the sound effect person. I think you're going to have to do the trumpet sound.
So, actually, this is a difficult thing to announce, but we are announcing that we are ending the podcast at episode 200. And we're at episode 198 now, so you've got two more episodes left. I'll let TB say something in a minute, but and we're not going to say too much now because that's what the last episode will be for. But we feel like we've done what we set out to do. And we both feel the podcast has run its course, I suppose. So for the next episode, number 199, we want you to set the agenda. So please mail in your comments or message us. Just tell us, tell us you love us, really. We just want love, don't we? But we want you to set the agenda. So please send in questions. You can comment on the website or email us, lesbiansyourright@gmail.com, or just message me or TB. And we promise we will look at the comments and questions. but you set the agenda for the next one. And the show will be as long or short as your messages are. So we've got two more shows to go. I know this might come as a bit of a shock, but we have loved doing the podcast. I think we both feel like the universe is telling us to end it now. And also, it's good to change things up a little bit in what you're doing day to day. And we know that the gap this leaves, something else great and wonderful will come and fill it. So but we've loved doing this 5 years, haven't we, TB?
We have, and I will say, hitting 200 episodes, I mean, that's quite a run. So, but it got to the point where, how many topics can you discuss?
Yeah.
Unless we start it all over again.
Yeah.
but it will be a loss in my life. It's with great sadness that we announced this, but also there's excitement as well. There's always a new thing over the horizon, so I don't know what's gonna happen. But I am glad that not only did Claire spend this time with us, with me, but all of you spent this time with us as well. So thank you very much for being there for pretty much 200 episodes. That's a lot. When we first started this, I had no idea what would happen, so this is quite a run.
No, neither of us did. But yeah, you can only, there's only so many topics we can cover, and we feel like we've covered them. But 5 years, pretty good run. But as we said, we've still got two episodes to go, so we hope you'll stick with us. And please do send us a question for next week. And then 200, we're just going to, you know, blow smoke it up each other's arse, aren't we? Is that basically the plan?
I wasn't aware, but okay. We'll pivot.
All right. So that's that big announcement out of the way. Now we're going to get on to how to write the perfect book. We haven't covered this one before, so what you got?
Well, do I give the spoiler? Do I just go right in for the spoiler?
You know, probably.
Okay. How to write the perfect book. I'm going to say you can't. I know all of us. I know, especially with A Woman Lost, which I just talked about a few minutes ago, you want to write the perfect book. You want to write this most amazing thing that people are just going to absolutely fall in love with, and you want to, like, wow everybody. And you probably will with your story, with some people and everything, but writing the perfect book is an illusion, and I think it's something that holds a lot of people back from actually publishing. Because they will just tinker and tinker and tinker with that book because it's not perfect yet. There is no such thing as perfection. And also, no one wants perfection. It's kind of boring. You can't really write your perfect book, but you can do some things to make it the best book. That's what I think you should strive for. The best book that you possibly can put out into the world. So I've come up with some points about that. How did you come at this one?
Probably in pretty much the same way you did as well. Yeah. You might have guessed that the topic is tongue in cheek. You can't write the perfect book, there is no such thing. And so pretty much what you said, but I would say as well that perfection is a form of procrastination. That's all it is. When you write your book, what you have is what you think in your mind. You've got a diamond, that's what you think. But in reality, what you have is a rough diamond, and it's up to you to polish it up as much as you want to. But you also have to know when to show that diamond off to the rest of the world, because there's no point in having a diamond if no one ever sees it. So perfection is a myth, it's just procrastination. If you want to write the best book that you can possibly write, then there are certain things that you should adhere to, and TB's got a list.
I've jotted down five things. Not all of them are like what you should do to write the best book, but some of them are. So the first step you need to do is know your market. When you're writing a book, know what readers are expecting. You know, with romance, they HEA or happy for now. You see a lot of comments on like cozy mystery books where they're reviewers are like, oh, I really like this book, but I guessed who the murderer was. Spoiler alert for cozy mystery fans, you're supposed to guess who the murderer is. That is part of the challenge of writing a cozy mystery. There's supposed to be enough clues where you do figure it out, because when you don't figure it out, the person has not executed the cozy mystery very well. Because it's the fun part. It's why we read these or watch the TV shows or such. It's the fun part. You want to be able to guess. So there are certain things. Know your market. Know what type of story you're writing and what readers expect. You can still bend the rules. You can break the rules, but I wouldn't break like the big things. So my next point is be professional as much as you can be. Have it edited. I know it's an expense. I do know it's an expense, but I can't tell you how much I've learned through the editing process. So be professional. Try to get the best product out there that you can with editors, or if you have people who know storytelling very well, have other people go through it and have like a cover made and everything like that. So that is another thing you can do to put out the best book you possibly can. Number three, this is probably one of the more important ones. Put your heart into it. You still need to know when to let it go and when it's time to publish it. This does get easier the more books you publish. It does get easier. The first few books, it's really hard to let go, because you still want to keep pouring your heart in it. But like Claire said earlier, it is a form of procrastination. So you put your heart into it, do what all you can do for the story, but also know the time to let it go and publish it and move on to the next story, because you may not feel like this, but you have more stories in you. I know it's hard because you pour so much of yourself into one book, and it's really hard to let it go. It's really hard to let the characters go, because if you spend that much time with them, you know them really well. But don't be afraid. Let it go. Another point that I think you can do to write the best book you can write, besides having it edited, get input. Have beta readers, or some people have alpha readers. Alpha readers are ones who read it as you go, and then beta readers will read it. You give them a draft, like probably a second or third draft, and they go over it and let you know their points. Early readers are valuable. They can help you fine-tune the story, so get input when you can. Number five really isn't really how to get the best book. It's just a piece of advice coming from me. Once it is out, be proud. Be proud that you published a book. Writing is really, really hard. Sometimes I feel insane that I do this over and over and over, because it's exhausting, it's emotionally draining, it's terrifying. But you did something so many people want to do. A lot of people, I can't tell you how many times I've heard from people in emails, texts, at conferences, who are like, I want to write this. I want to write this book. This is a dream I've always wanted to do. And you have. If you publish a book, you have done it. You're in a small percentage, so be fucking proud.
That's a really important point. Yes, I hadn't got that, but be fucking proud. We should put that on a badge or a button, as they say in the US of A.
Yes. So those are my points about how to write the perfect book. Again, remembering that there's no such thing.
Perfection is a fallacy. Right, I've got some other points I wrote down as well. So you're getting all the gold in episode 198. So golden rules for me for writing are to remember to read. You can't output if you don't input, and reading, I know it's a bit crude to call it that, but it is putting new information inside your brain, and then your brain can whirl it up and spit some new things out. If you don't have anything new going into your brain, this things coming out of your brain will get a bit stale, which is why writing felt a little bit difficult in the pandemic, because there was nothing new. So get out there, I'd say, and experience life, and you will come up with new ideas. A little bit like TB was saying, a lot of people I meet, when they write in their first book, they're like, oh, I didn't want to put that in because I'm saving that idea for the next book. No, don't do that. Don't hold back ideas. Put it all in this book, not all of it, because some of it might not go with that story, but you know what I mean. Don't hold back it. Don't say, oh, I'm going to save that for another character. Put the ones that fit in this book and just trust yourself. And it does take a while for this to happen. And sometimes, still now, like I've written 24 novels, just about to release my 25th, I still sometimes get to the end of a book and think, oh, I haven't got an idea for this one. But I trust the process. I sound like a football manager. It doesn't really matter. It's like with the Christmas book. I don't know what's going to happen in this Christmas book. All I know is two women will get together. There'll be some obstacles. They'll fall in love. But apart from that, there'll be snow and tinsel and lights. But I don't know the premise. I don't know what tropes I'm going to put in there. I don't know. I don't know where it's going to be set. I don't know. But I trust that I'll come up with something, because I've done it before. The more experience you have in this, the more you trust yourself. But it is scary when you first do it, but don't hold back. And just read widely, be curious about life. And you know, as well, I always thought when people said be curious about life, I thought, oh, don't be a wanker. But, and I still kind of think that when people say it, I'm like, oh, it just sounds a bit cringy, doesn't it? Be curious about life. What do you think? Do you think that sounds a bit wanky?
Oh, I'm like the most curious person on the planet. I think one of the saddest things is when we grow up, we learn that ability to ask why. So I love being curious.
Okay.
I find it amazing, and it helps keep me childish.
I think it's just the term, just be curious. If anyone says that, I just think don't be a wanker. So, but I agree with the premise of it. I just don't like the term. There you go. That's just one of my little pet hates. but I would also say, just if you want to try and write the best book that you can do, think about how many words you want to write. Commit to writing for however many days a week you can, and work out how long it will take you to do. Do the maths, work backwards, but then also add in at least 3 extra weeks for those days when things don't go to plan, for those days when you're ill, for those days when, it's not gonna happen, because sometimes that will happen. And I'd also set a hard deadline. Book an editor, book a cover designer, and then get the first draft done. And as TB said, be proud, but I'd also say celebrate. You did a hard thing. But remember, it's just your first draft. And the key thing to remember in getting the best book you can is that writing is rewriting. And rewriting is hard. I always think when I'm first drafting that the first draft is the hardest bit. And then when I'm rewriting, I think rewriting is the hardest bit. Rewriting, it's where you put in the gold. Honestly, it's where the magic happens. It's where you ferret out all the dark alleys you went down in that first draft, and you close them off with a big gate and a lock and a padlock. It's where you add in the foreshadowing. It's where you glue in the gold. Oh, I like that. It's good, isn't it? Where you glue in the gold.
There you go. And the more I do this as a career, the more I realize every step is hard.
It's true. Every step is hard. But when you've got the book in your hand at the end, it's worth it, sort of.
Then you have to market it, and that's hard. Every step is hard. So this is something, you know, you just have to know going in. There's some days where it's magic, where like the words are flowing from you for that first draft and everything. But then the next day you read it and you're like, why was I so excited about this? Every step's hard. So it is, just keep going, I guess is my point 6. Keep going.
I think that's going to be the last words we say on this podcast in episode 200, isn't it? Because it's our refrain that we keep saying. But yeah, rewriting, very hard for me to say. But you know, it's where you flesh out descriptions, iron out the plot, amp up the drama and the emotions. You know, it's where you get your characters running, sobbing, bursting, rather than just sitting around drinking coffee and talking at each other a lot. Rewriting. And there endeth our lessons on how to write the perfect book. Short answer, you can't. Just write your book, edit your book, be proud of your book, and then probably write the next one.
That's the trick. Keep going.
Just keep going. All right. We hope that this has been helpful. We hope you've been writing down every pearl of wisdom that we've espoused this episode. And we will see you back here next time. Please send in your questions for our penultimate episode, episode 199, which is, and if they're about ice cream, that's fine, because 199 is ice cream themed, isn't it? Because a 99 is the classic English ice cream from an ice cream van, which is a vanilla ice cream with a chocolate flake in it. And I'm looking forward to my first one of the summer, but we're episode 199. So, I mean, we can go back on ice cream if we want, can't we?
It's funny you mention that. I was watching a British show last week, and it made me think of you in One Golden Summer, because one of the characters had a 99, and I was like, oh, I remember having a battle about 99s.
We did. We did.
Fun times.
Fun times. So, yeah, do get any questions. Email us, lesbianswhowrite@gmail.com. Comment on the website, www.lesbianswhowrite.com. You can probably get in touch with me on Instagram, @ClaireFick. Don't bother with the Twitter. She's not going to look at it. But just email us, comment on the website, Instagram me, and get in touch with your questions for our penultimate episode. And anything else to say?
Thank you for spending all this time with us.
We're not done.
It's been very special.
We're not done yet, TB. Save it.
I just want to say it comes from the heart. This was a hard decision to make. So it's never easy to do this. So we appreciate everything, and we will be back in the next episode, and hopefully we'll be sharing some things that you have shared with us that will make it even more special.
Yes, we'd like a love-in, and we'd like your questions. You've only got two more episodes, so make it count. All right, until then, keep writing.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Lesbians Who Write. Follow us on Twitter @LesWhoWrite, or show us some love on our website by leaving us a comment or buying us a coffee. And sign up to our newsletter while you're there to never miss another episode. Head over to lesbianswhowrite.com. Also, if you could take a moment to leave us a review wherever you listen to this podcast, it would help more listeners to discover us. Thanks so much, and see you next time.